What is up, Kangaroo Chasers? And this week, I'm talking to our man, Rob Bergen. You've heard him on the pod many, many times. I'll give you a couple of episodes in case you want to go back and have a listen. He was all the way back on episode 43, The Latin Godfather, still actually one of our top maybe 15 episodes, and it was all the way back in episode 43. So absolutely fantastic. It was in a few others as well, guys, but jump into the back catalogue as always, check it out. But Rob Bergen, he is football manager for Brazil Rugby League, still keen to get the women's side over there for the 2021 World Cup. He's founder of Latin Heat. He's done a whole bunch of other things with QRL and other things as well, but a legend of the sport at this level, at that international, as part of that international rugby league community. And, you know, he and I have been firing off all sorts of things on Twitter, social media, based on some things that Phil Gould has been saying about international rugby league and the World Cup and yada, yada, yada. And I just thought I'd give him a call and say, hope you're going okay, mate. And if you want to get anything off your chest, let's talk about it and let's record a podcast. And that's what we did. So you're going to hear the phone call between myself and Rob, just chatting about things, rugby league in general, and, you know, what's wrong with the game, NRL versus international, and what needs to change and what can change and what should be done and what's not being done. And it's just I can't even describe the episode. I don't know how I'm going to write a description about it. It's so, there's just so much discussion, and I love talking to Rob. He's a very knowledgeable, great guy. And, you know, the one thing for me is that as an international rugby league fans community, we need to come together and stay strong and keep fighting because we've got a beautiful sport and there needs to be more to it than NRL, that's for sure. So, guys, let's get straight to it. Big thanks to Matt Haynes Sport, our sponsor, matthaynesport.com.au. If you need a logo jersey designed for your rugby league club at any level, or any other sport, then matthaynesport.com.au. If you want to get him produced, let him know you're a Kangaroo Chaser for 10% off as well. Matt, we love you, mate. Thank you for your support. Of course, chasingroos.com. If you want international rugby league kit, jerseys from anywhere around the world. We've got quite a few places covered and we're trying to build that up and we're doing that with your support. We're getting new nations all the time and getting our USA Hawks gear soon, for example. And we've got so much great stuff there. So check it out if you haven't already, chasingroos.com. We ship everywhere in the world. And right now, while Sydney is in lockdown, we've got a lockdown special just to support Sydney. Lockdown 15 is the 15% discount code. So check it out, chasingroos.com, and use that discount code lockdown15 for 15% off worldwide, anywhere. Guys, enough from me. Now let's go straight to the phone call with Rob Bergen. I'm Michael Carboni. This episode 123. Of the Chasing Kangaroos podcast.
You're listening to Chasing Kangaroos, the podcast for international rugby league fans.
Hey, mate.
Hey, mate, how you going?
Yeah, good. Is that line okay?
Perfect, man. Perfect.
Yeah, I'm only getting about half bars here, so.
Mate, that's okay. That's pretty good, actually. There's a joke there, but I'm going to leave it alone. What's happening, mate? How have you been? I've only seen angry tweets from you, and you've probably only seen the same from myself, so I hope you're okay.
Yeah, mate. As I say, you should be charging a psychologist fee for the next couple of hours.
Well, let's get straight into it, man, because, like, I've been mainly firing shots at Gus Gould on Twitter, which a lot of our listeners have been quietly, like, cheering on in the background, and I noticed you've been doing the same, and I thought, let's have a chat about it. But, man, I don't even know where to begin because, like, the last few weeks have been insane. But I think where I should start and then just let it flow from there is Gus made a comment that the NRL should run International Rugby League, and I won't say everything that he said on the tweet, but that was the crux of his comment. What do you think, mate, of that?
Mate, I think I've probably I've calmed a little in the sense that I don't want to demonize Gus. I think it's really easy to play the man and not the ball.
Yep.
And I think there's probably an element of truth to what Gus says, but if only if you twist it. You know, I think when they say they should run the International Rugby League, like I think it should be they should have a responsibility towards International Rugby League. And it's true that they have the power to influence and change things, but it should be changing it for the better. And you know, it's the same position. You know, if I'm walking along the street and someone asks me if you know I've got $2 to lend them, I don't need to I don't need to dismiss them straight away. I can help them in other ways as well. You know, I don't think that you know, the countries of International Rugby League just want to be treated with a little bit of respect more so than anything. So, I'm kind of coming at it from a few different angles at the moment, and I'd like to add that, you know, whatever I tweet out is pretty premeditated anyway. I can kind of gauge what response it's going to get, and I keep my powder dry for the times that you need to get a bit of controversy going.
Well, I know that everything you say has a lot of thought put into it, and it's very obvious, mate. And knowing you for the last couple of years as well, I know the type of guy you are. You're one of the smartest operators in rugby league, I've got to say, which may not be a difficult thing, but you're up there. You are up there.
Some people would say if I was one of the smartest, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I'm with you, and look, there's no doubt the power of the NRL, and there's no doubt the importance of the NRL. It's the greatest rugby competition in the world, and you know yourself, like rugby league, like you've got a lot to do with Brazilian rugby league, obviously, right now. Brazilian rugby league probably wouldn't be a thing if it wasn't for the NRL, because not because of anything the NRL have done, but consequently because they were, you know, Sonny Bill Williams was noticed as an NRL player, for example, and that's sort of how things got initially started over there in Brazil. So just by
And I mean also the coordination of them previously having Taz Bateri, who was an NRL employee. So without his presence, who knows what would be happening in South America, but that's probably one of the points we'll address as we chat.
Well, let's do that. I'm glad you mentioned Taz, because one of the things that Gus said, and I won't talk too much about Gus, but one thing he said was the NRL don't really understand International Rugby League, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, probably one of the reasons for that is, you know, they had a guy like Taz Bateri working for them not long ago, and he was sort of made redundant during this thing called COVID. And I kind of feel like it was a numbers game. Like, I don't think they looked at a list of names and said, yep, we'll get rid of Taz. It was kind of like, let's get rid of this International Rugby League side of things. And I just feel like that we're in a position now where if the NRL was run by International Rugby League, I just don't feel like the brains are there for International Rugby League. They don't understand. I don't think the NRL realizes, for example, what you're doing in Brazil. They don't understand that that even exists. Would I be right in saying that?
Oh, yeah, I've had that exact conversation with people inside the NRL this year where they've said, I didn't realise that there was rugby league in Brazil, and I mean even laughed in the sentence. So, it's not a far-flung idea to think that they don't have any idea what's happening over there.
It's so funny because I always joke around and say people that listen to Chasing Kangaroos understand more about rugby league around the world than like 99% of NRL fans, but it's probably also than 99% of people within the NRL. Like, it's that insane. But tell me a little bit then about maybe some of the conversations you have had with the NRL. So I understand you wrote a big piece on Twitter as well, on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, and it ended up being shared all over the place. But conversations you've had with the NRL asking for assistance. And so tell us about some of those things and what those conversations were like, and you know, what were the kind of things that you reached out for or needed help with, in particular with Brazil?
Yeah, I think it's important to say from the outset that I wouldn't be shooting my lip off, if it was, you know, an isolated experience or it was over a short period of time.
Yeah.
But I've been, you know, doing the Latin American Rugby League for 8-9 years now. And over the last 5 years in particular, it's been really hard to get cooperation on even the small things. And Gus kind of came back and, you know, was talking about, well, you know, this would require X amount of coordination, et cetera. A lot of it is simply about things that could be solved with an email. And yeah. That's the main thing that really bugs me. And some of the things, you know, I previously worked with the QRL. I know how quickly you can achieve some of these things if you just want to do it. So things like trying to find players of a certain heritage on the NRL database. Now, you can't contact them directly because of privacy issues, but you can identify them. And at the situation for us to find players of, you know, certain ethnicities, 8 to 9 years ago, it was actually easier than it is now, which is insane. Like that process, NRL stores all the heritage data of every player that is within their competitions. But the way of sharing it or even just them mailing out to those people and saying, are you aware that XX opportunity exists, blah, blah, blah. There's so many people out there that don't even know that they have an opportunity to play representative rugby league.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that really hurts, because one of the things I've seen with our sport, well, with our teams, especially across Latin America, is there's a lot of guys going towards the end of their career, you know, 30 plus, and they're struggling to find a reason why they should be around rugby league, whether that's to stay as a coach or a volunteer or, you know, play on. And international rugby league, the chance to represent, say, a Peru or a El Salvador, has kept them in the game another 10 years or so. And what they've been able to do is foster a sense of, like, cultural identity within their community and then take that and start, you know, benevolent projects overseas, et cetera. And suddenly these are guys who are just weekend warriors who found a whole sense of fulfillment and been able to grow the game internationally. But we've got this massive roadblock where we'll, you know, write to the NRL and say, we've got such and such a test match coming up. We would, you know, like to know what female players or male players of this certain heritage are on the database. And then we used to have cooperation on that all the time. Now, yeah, just don't hear back anymore on things like that. So for me, it's really disappointing, because the difference that one or two players, and I'm not talking about flooding your team with heritage players and making it all about Australians.
Yeah.
But the difference that one or two guys who have, you know, Australian coaching background in the sport can make to a developing nation is huge. And for them, it seems like a drop in the water or a pain in the butt to search for these things. But I honestly know from doing it myself that you can do it in 2 minutes, and it makes, you know, it can make years of difference to how a nation progresses in the development phase. So that's a very long answer, but that's one of the easiest ones for me to identify, where just a simple change of attitude, where at the moment it's couldn't be bothered, that's too much effort. If you go that extra step, the benefits that the sport as a whole gets from it, and retaining people in Australia, where you know, the number of senior male rugby league players has been just declining and declining for the past 15 years, we're not finding ways to combat that. And I honestly believe that making more of fanfare about international rugby league and cultural rugby league is one of the avenues that we have that hasn't been exploited or explored to keep people within the game as long as they really could be.
It's the beauty of Australia is that everyone you meet comes from somewhere. Where, you know what I mean? Everyone's got some sort of background, some sort of heritage, some sort of culture, everyone you speak to. And, you know, the longer things go, the more different types of heritage people have, and it sort of gets mixed up. But it's a beautiful thing. And it's funny what you said about the heritage players. We always say, the one of the biggest arguments we have is always around, you know, what's that magic number for heritage players? And you know, should you have a full squad? Should you have 8? Should you have 2? You know, what's that magic number? And there's no real magic number, but what you did hit the nail on was that those Australian coached players are you know, sort of what you want in your team at the moment. And over time, you don't want to have to rely on those. But even speaking to, I've been speaking to a couple of guys around the PNG Hunters system, and, you know, Hunt, like PNG is, you know, rugby league is religion over there. And, but when you look at the raw talent that comes into that Hunter squad and they can make it all the way, like Justin Ollum, for example, is one that we keep bringing up, but they just want to like run fast, bash people and play like old school footy. But what the Hunters are trying to do is get a couple of like PNG heritage boys who've been grown up and trained in Australia, the Australian way, just to sort of give them that sort of balance and stability and sort of teach the other guys, you know, a little bit of structure and things like that. And in time, you won't need that, but it's really important right now. And you probably get that in your Brazilian squad. You get that everywhere. You know, it doesn't matter where you go, you're going to get that. So it is important. Mate, well,
yeah, like a prime example I can think off the top of my head is Sean Olarte, or Sean Day, as most people know him from Peru, who's like, he's been the captain, the big front rower. And Sean, you know, was identified and he was towards the end of his career, wasn't really sure what he wanted to do with the sport. Since then, he's probably, through his business, Shield Security, he's probably the second biggest investor in Latin American nations, like in terms of sponsorship, over the past 10 years outside of a multinational in Guzman and Gomez. Yeah. So Sean has not only sponsored Peru and played for Peru and gone over to Peru and developed the sport there, he sponsored El Salvador, he sponsored Chile, he went to you know, the America's Cup in Jacksonville to support Chile when they were playing over there. You know, he's sponsored Brazil. He's basically, you know, put his hand in his pocket for everyone. And these kind of people are the ones that save the International Rugby League or the other leagues having to spend money. Like, they're actually propping them up. And Lord knows we need more and more businesses and individuals that, you know, are inclined that way.
Especially now, as league players are earning more and more, which is fine, but they're also getting into business. Like, you see players sort of, you know, using their profile for profit, which is also fine. And after their careers, they're really, you know, you got players owning cafes and t-shirt brands and just all these different things, right? So, you know, you eventually they're going to say, hey, I want to kind of give back to rugby league, and if, you know, there's a heritage they love, then there's something there as well in it. So everything sort of compounds over time and grows. I wanted to go back to what you were saying about how it seems like a recent thing that the NRL don't seem to be cooperating in terms of heritage. Why is that? Is it because guys like Taz aren't there anymore, or is it something else?
Yeah, I think it's partly that. I think it's partly because as we spoke before, I don't think the knowledge base of what's happening at an emerging nations level is there. I think a big reason, you know, that we might explore later is that emerging nations have very little say or representation in the process. And then for me, probably a more worrying trend, which I, you know, half suspect, half know to be true, is that there is a much bigger rift between the Southern Hemisphere and the Northern Hemisphere than anyone would really like to admit in rugby league. And I've sat in, you know, and you're probably the same because you're very connected with rugby league, but the further and further I kind of have got closer and got to know people, the more that I think that animosity is kind of a bit, getting a bit childish and really hurtful to the sport.
Yeah.
The degree that, you know, you can sit in a room with the people from Northern Hemisphere and anything to do with Southern Hemisphere or heritage players from Australia is, you know, is complete hogwash. And, you know, by the opposite token, if you sit in a room with people from the Southern Hemisphere and talk about what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere, then, you know, automatically they don't know what they're doing, et cetera. And I think we all have times when we express our frustration, but the point that it's got to on an international scale in the North versus South has got to a point where it almost needs like a marriage counsellor.
Yeah.
it's very hurtful, and I think people got so far involved in it that they don't recognise that anymore, like how we're holding back the sport.
That's never been more apparent to me because of the World Cup, where, and like as you said, I'm quite connected in the international rugby league community. I speak to everyone, and everyone that I speak to from the Northern Hemisphere has been telling me for the last 12 months the World Cup's on, It's happening. Mm-hmm. It has to happen. It's really important. And everyone I speak to involved in nations in the Southern Hemisphere saying, oh, we don't think it's going to be on. It's not going to be that safe. I don't think we should do it. Like, do we really need to do it? Can't we postpone it? And just the complete difference, I'm just astounded. I've gone like, are you people not speaking to each other? Because I'm hearing 100% different things from everyone on either mm-hmm. side of the hemispheres, I guess. And it's really just surprising to me. And just to hear some of the comments on Twitter most recently about, like people from England complaining and whinging. And it's not just that. It's not that. Like, we're Aussies and we're sort of complaining and whinging about it too. But if anything, I do think one thing that I've been saying for a number of years is I think England has been on an international level and probably on their club level as well, they've been too reliant on Australia and New Zealand, way too reliant. And I would have loved to have seen more investment in France and Wales in particular and more of their neighbours, because if the Super League was stronger and if their neighbours were a little bit stronger on an international level, they probably wouldn't care if Australia and New Zealand weren't coming to the World Cup.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the lesson learnt now, and is it too late or can anything be done? I don't know. But, man, you're totally right about that divide.
Yeah, I think one of the things we also see a lot on social media is people saying, you know, the IRL haven't invested into that, or the IRL isn't doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I think, and I used to get this wrong all the time as well myself, you know, probably for the first 5 years I was involved with developing nations, is thinking of the IRL as some all-powerful being in the sky, when yeah. really the IRL is like a community, like a cooperative.
Yep.
You know, they don't have a lot of money. They don't have a lot of power. And a lot of that is because of, like, part things in the past. You know, the people that are sort of at the moment are having to clean up what they were handed.
Yeah.
So it's not really their fault. You can't say, look, they've done a terrible job, because they weren't given anything to start with, and it's really hard to build something with nothing in your hands. So I think, you know, international fans around the world need to look at, you know, the IRL as kind of like a union that represents all the countries and brings them together and steers them, you know, in a direction towards something. It's not someone that's going to rock up and, you know, give you $100,000 and say, here, build your competition.
Yep.
You've still got to do that yourself and then use the power of the IRL to come together on collective matters and bring us together. So, again, when the NRL says it's not in our charter to develop overseas, yeah, it's not directly. But again, if I'm the richest person on my street and I just ignore everyone else, what kind of human person does that make you, you know? Yeah. And a lot of the things that I'm saying, again, you know, coaching materials, etc., that takes you, you know, a couple of minutes to attach it to an email and press send. It's not like we're saying, here, we want $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 off your time. I don't think the people who've been playing this game, you know, for a while, that's not the way they operate. They know that it all just comes down to resource sharing and being considerate of each other. And one of the first things that I wrote in that post on Facebook was about being told, no, we won't share our coaching resources with you because that's our intellectual property.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a, like, an evil, corrupt way to look at developing a sport. Like, you know, let's say, for example, in Brazil, I go out and develop a coaching course, and then Paraguay comes to me and says, hey, Rob, we're really starting from scratch. I could use that coaching course. Then 100% I'm going to give it to them. Like, there's no way that I would even think of holding the bat. And we already know within, you know, Latin America, all the countries share resources like that. And the thing that really annoys me about that is you've got people down there getting paid a hell of a lot of money to promote and produce all of these different materials. And then what happens is you turn around and say, no, we're not going to share it with you. So there's a guy that's, you know, in the middle of Chile who's earning $5,000 a year, and he has to go and spend, you know, whatever it is, 4 hours, 5 hours a night building all these resources with scratch, with nothing to work from, and it could all be solved by shooting him something over. But it's that the non-consideration of the humane factor of it, and that's the bit that's really starting to eat away at me. It's not about the money. It's about the human impact that this is having on people overseas. And Gus has a really, you know, solid point, and other people, you know, let's not make it all about Gus, but other people saying it's the International Rugby League's responsibility to develop, you know, a global framework for, you know, developing officials, match officials and coaches, which it is. But for the past 5 years, it's been this, you know, I don't know if you're going to have to bleep this out, but it's a big swinging dick contest between do we adopt the RFL model, do we adopt the NRL model, you know, as in does everyone become an accredited NRL ref, does everyone become accredited RFL? And they're sorting that out. It's getting close, but it's been, you know, more than 5 years of this big argument about who do we adopt. And in the meantime, everyone is just stagnating. People are getting older. They're spending time away from their kids, their wives. It's hurting them financially. And this is the real cost and the real thing that makes me angry at the end of the day. The reason I wanted to start Latin American Rugby League was partly about rugby league, but was hugely about forming relationships between our nation and the developing world, and about making better life opportunities for people, and about friendship circles. And they're the three things that are really, really suffering at the moment. Like, I've got, you know, we lost a huge friend in Carlos Varela from Argentina a few years ago.
Yeah.
Because he got jack of it all and just walked away and said, I'm going to Global Rugby League because you guys are not supporting me. And that's not just a massive country gone in Argentina. It's a friendship that we all had for years and years. And now where I can see where we're heading at the moment is a lot more of my friends that I've been working with for years are starting to see us middle people as totally ineffective because we can't get the big boys, whether it's from the RFL or the NRL, to agree and do things. So they're all going to get frustrated at someone, and we're the only ones that spend FaceTime with them. So
yeah,
who's it going to be? It's going to be us. So yeah, again, it's not about money. It's not about power. It's the human relationships that are in front of us right now.
There's so many things I want to unpack, Rob. Like, I remember that happening with Carlos Ferrer, and that was huge. I remember it being a massive thing, and I remember how much it hurt you as well, because he was a friend, and it was a massive thing, and we can maybe dig deeper into that another time. But where do I start? So the thing with the NRL for me is the contradictions. So it's up to the IRL to organise coaching and refereeing and blah, 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 blah. Yet, you know, the NRL will change the rules to their competition dramatically in round 10 of the season, and then everyone else just has to follow. And it's like, okay, how is the IRL meant to keep up with that? And does every competition in the world need to do what you're doing? And what I guess the problem is the rest of the world has followed along in most recent times because of the power the NRL has. But it's contradictions like that annoy me. Like, are Tonga important or are they not? You know, is New South Wales more important than Tonga? One minute it is, one minute it isn't. And it's the NRL that dictates depending on, you know, how much money they make from each game. And it's that sort of thing, I feel like. And I don't think it's anyone's fault in particular. It's just the way the beast has needed to grow and the way it earns at the moment. It's just dictated decisions that are made. Because, look, I know it's been a difficult time in the world over the last couple of years, but, you know, we had to somehow get Tonga versus New Zealand happening somehow, some way over the last year or two, surely. Like, I just don't understand how we're not building that up as big as State of Origin. Like, it can be that, and I don't understand why the NRL doesn't see that, because it's another cash cow for them potentially, but they're not doing it for some reason. But I feel for the middleman, as you said, and the thing that concerns me the most, just speaking to you now, is, you know, that guy from in the middle of Chile earning $5,000 a year who needs to put together a document from scratch that he could get emailed to him from the NRL, you know, with you as a middleman, the NRL doesn't know he exists. The NRL doesn't know the potential there. And I just sort of wonder, you know, are we doing enough as a community, as a small international rugby league community, to make ourselves known to the NRL? Like, how do we do that? What do we need to do?
Yeah, I think promotion can certainly be better from everyone, and it's again, it comes down to time and connections, and that's something we don't all have the ability to appear on a TV show or to walk into a boardroom and make our voice heard. For some of us, it's just a succession of emails over years and years being ignored, or sending invites to people to come to your games and never hearing back from them.
Yeah.
And that's your interaction.
I've watched a couple of Brazilian rugby league games this year, obviously, mate, as you know, and just the vibe and the flavour that your boys bring to the occasion is just, on both occasions, I've just sat there thinking, imagine we had like just one Brazilian player at NRL level. Like, just imagine how crazy that would be. And if that nation, which I know you guys will be there one day, man, because of the work that you're doing, and probably in the women's game quicker than the men's, but the flavour that a Brazilian team can bring to an international rugby league competition is insane. And you can multiply that, you know, dozens of times over with other nations as well.
Mate, you were there at the game Brazil versus Philippines, and, you know, I've run like plenty of events over the years, and some have been really enjoyable and some have been, you know, hit and miss where we haven't quite got it right. But I felt that that game, Brazil versus Philippines as an event, was so enjoyable. I know that if I went there as a neutral, I would have had a great time. And I think take away the Brazil side of it so that, you know, I'm not invested in this. But even the Philippines, like what potential the Philippines have, you know, hugely populous country as well, that's pretty much on our doorstep. You've got someone in the NRL like Payne Haas. They've had 12 NRL players come out of the Philippines or with Filipino heritage.
Yeah.
So, you know, an example from that is I sent invites to that game to a whole bunch of people from the NRL. We specifically had it at Kensington because we knew that it was close to NRL headquarters.
Yeah.
And there was no other games in Sydney on that day on the eastern suburbs.
Yeah.
So our hope was to have people come down, experience that vibe, see that we're not, you know, make-believe blokes that, you know, are just flying around, you know, making up stories about what's going on. And they would have loved it. They would have had such an enjoyable day. But I heard back from one person from the NRL and they said they couldn't come. And then I wrote to them and said, oh, okay, so, you know, you couldn't come, but how about we sit down and have that chat about NRL streaming overseas? Then I didn't get a reply to that. So, you know, it's just the really small things. They could have said, yeah, let's have a coffee, or, you know, just continued it somehow. But it's continual brick walls.
Just to back you up on that as well, you know, because of where it was, you did have a lot of impartial sort of fans that just came to for the footy, and they were blown away. The amount of people that spoke to me that day or messaged me, DM'd me, emailed me over the next week saying, when is the next one of these happening? Because I want to go to that as well. Or people that missed out and they saw our vlog, when is the next one of these happening? Because I want to go to that. Like, when's it happening in Sydney again? Insane. And the other thing that's insane is to think that, you know, the NRL, so the NRL take a lot of credit or demand a lot of credit for the growing game in the Pacific. And there's some great things happening there. And whether it's all NRL doing the work, the heavy lifting, or if it's the Asia Pacific Rugby League doing the heavy lifting, who it is more likely than other, or if it's the Australian government offering grants to things like Cavite Silktails and PNG Hunters, whoever's, you know, the NRL takes a lot of that credit, right? Or the general rugby league community just assumes that it's the NRL doing the heavy lifting. I should reword that, because I don't want to sound like, you know, the NRL's taking credit for it. But they seem to focus a lot on Pacific Islands, which is great, you know, and there's a lot of great rugby talent in Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, Papua New Guinea, and a lot of that is channeling over to rugby league, which is fantastic to see, and it's great because they kind of, especially the Fijians, they got a chance to be more explosive in rugby league than they do in rugby union. I believe it's much more entertaining to watch from my perspective anyway, and this, again, it's probably more opportunities for them to make it from their small islands and small villages, and it's just fantastic to see.
Mm.
But, you know, to me, the NRL's only interest is pathways. They want to see more Marcus Evos in the NRL. They want to see more Justin Ollams because it makes their competition stronger, and that's fine. I have no issue with that. Like, I have no issue with the NRL, you know, prioritising the NRL. That's their job.
Yep.
But it just makes me wonder, you know, they focus so much on And this was another point you made. They focus so much on an area with a population of about 3.5 to 4 million people in total, and that's the islands, and that's excluding Papua New Guinea, New Zealand, etc. But that's the Pacific Islands. When, you know, the nations the two nations you just mentioned, Brazil and Philippines, what's the combined population of those two nations again?
It'd be between 320 and 340 million, I think.
So insane. So you just need a small percentage of those populations to, you know, find the sport, play the sport, watch the sport, and you're smothering the Pacific. And there are some athletes there as well.
And I think we discussed before, when rugby league was on free-to-air sport in Brazil, it was in the top six watched nations in the world for rugby league, and there was zero groundwork being done.
Yeah.
So with no base, it suddenly had astronomical numbers. So imagine what you could do with 5 years of concerted effort there.
And that's one thing the NRL can do. So we're not asking the NRL for money or attention or whatever, but we just want them to, like, there's some things the NRL could do, like streaming, which you've already touched on, and I'd like to dig a little bit deeper into. By giving away streaming for even a short period of time to nations that wouldn't know rugby league exists anyway, so wouldn't pay for it, is such a small thing for them to do and could potentially have such huge benefits, not only for the NRL, but for rugby league as a sport globally.
Yeah. And I've been through multiple models of how we could do this in a way that doesn't hurt the NRL.
Yeah.
And still is able to provide something at a value. And I think the best way is if you copy what, you know, PlayStation, Xbox have done, in that you link your pricing to what their annual wage is there. So you're not giving away for free.
Yeah.
And then people say, oh, you can get around that with a VPN, but you can't if it has to be linked to a credit card in that country. And then that has to match, you know, where you're trying to access from. There's, you know, if those networks can do it, then so can we. And all you're saying is, you know, instead of basically in somewhere we say like Brazil, instead of it being $20 a week to access NRL Live Pass, which I think it is if you get it as a one-off, then maybe it's $6 or whatever percentage of, you know, their weekly wage it needs to be. And not only are you building a little bit of money in the kitty and spreading the word, which, I mean, the exposure is really the valuable part, but also what you're doing is capturing data there. So you're finding out how many people are interested, what are their names, where do they live, you know, can we expose them to merchandise, can we expose them to other things that are going to help us long term. But at the moment, our solution seems to be, let's just advertise to expats at full price and take what we want because it's too hard to modify our pricing for everyone. And we're learning zero data about the rest of the world.
Yeah. It's almost as if, you know, as a sport in Australia, we've been too busy picking up the scraps and fighting amongst ourselves since the Super League war and trying to sort of get out of those shadows and finally, you know, being one of the big players again in Australian sport. And it's like, okay, we're done. We're not like, there's no what next. And I don't know, it's a strange one for me because I just see so much potential.
I think probably one thing I want to go back to, we're talking about the Pacific Islands. You know, some of my friends that have worked really hard in the Pacific Islands or people from Pacific Island background, you know, got in touch and they were upset saying, you know, why do you want to take something away from us? And that's not it at all. It's saying like at the moment it took Pacific Islands about 80 years to get the deserved attention that they should be getting. Like their potential has only been explored the last 20 to 25 years, but they've always been there. They've always had this physical capability.
Yeah.
They're only getting the attention now. What I'm saying is I don't want the rest of the world to have to wait 80 years. And if you're only getting 3% of the attention and only 3% of the people that work within the NRL know what's going on, you know, in the Pacific, then I'd like 3% to know what's going on in Asia and 3% to know what's going on in South America. It's not that we have to take it away from those nations. It's that we should have an equitable consideration of each region.
Yep. Do you think it comes down to dollars only for the NRL? Is that the only reason they'd make a decision? Are they just not prepared to make an investment if there isn't a guaranteed return almost immediately?
Yeah, well, going back to a conversation before about the North versus South,
yep.
You know, I really have to think, are some of the things that they're doing on purpose?
Yep.
You know, are they purposely creating a much bigger rift than there was because they're upset at the way that the board works now
yep.
in the IRL? Do they want to completely devalue and destabilize the sport so that they can take over with a minimum of ease and do what they like with the sport?
Yep.
And I'd hate that to be the case, but the more like non-cooperation you get, the more you start to think that way.
I wasn't sure if I should mention it myself because I've had this thought over the last couple of weeks as well. I've said it to a couple of people privately, you know, the conspiracy theory that, you know, the NRL was talking earlier in the year about, you know, potentially investing or buying the Super League. So, but if the Super League died, they wouldn't have to pay much or to get in there and, you know, potentially the same thing here. So I don't want to make assumptions out loud, but it's pretty hard not to when, again, and we keep going back to Gus Gordon. I don't really want to keep doing that, but, you know, he was very vocal about the NRL buying Super League and things like that. And he's now very vocal about this sort of stuff. And it's like, it's all a little too convenient for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, we won't touch that too much more. I'm sure people can make their own assumptions and, you know, we've probably just been deep in all of this stuff way too long to really see it for what it is. But, mate, World Cup.
Yeah.
You're involved very heavily, obviously, in the Brazilian women's. What are you hearing at the moment? Obviously, the whole discussion here in Australia or in the Australian media sort of played out for a couple of days, but then the NRL got shut down for a day and we haven't heard about it since because there seem to be bigger issues for rugby league, according to the Australian media. But what are you hearing in terms of is it going ahead or is it not going ahead with or without NRL players?
Well, I'm not hearing a lot. And I mean, the other thing is probably by the time the podcast comes out, we'll already know what's happening. So I don't want to sound foolish in retrospect, but it's been a bit quiet the last few days. You know, a week and a half ago, I was very confident that it would go ahead without the superpowers. And I think, you know, that the word watershed has been used by a lot of people behind the scenes as to if we don't develop an economic model or events that have value connected to them that don't involve Australia and New Zealand,
yep.
when are we ever going to do that? And so we will dance to their tune for an eternity if someone doesn't bite the bullet one day and hold events without them and start to build a calendar that doesn't rely particularly on their involvement. And I thought everyone was you know, boots in for that approach. But the last few days, especially since the NRL statement's been very quiet, and I haven't gone digging too deeply for the answer either, probably because I'm afraid of what I might find.
Yeah.
So that's where I sit at the moment. But I was speaking to a good friend of yours before, Philip Brown, about just some jerseys, like getting in jerseys, and I said to him, mate, it really depends on what happens with the World Cup. And
yep.
I've honestly had around a dozen conversations today that have all ended with the phrase, you know, I don't know what happens until I know what's going on with the World Cup. And that's, you know, that can be in relation to me deciding whether I'm selling my car, whether my wife wants us to buy a dog, whether the nations of Latin America are going to play a championship early next year, for eventual World Cup qualification for the next cycle, when the America's Nines are on. Pretty much, you know, anything you can think about in our lives at the moment revolves around when is the World Cup on.
I had an argument a few months ago with my wife, which I don't think she'll mind me saying, because we booked a holiday. And it probably won't matter now because we've been in lockdown for so long and who knows how long it's going to go for. But basically, she originally booked this holiday for the same, and it fell on the last week of the World Cup.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was like, so what I haven't shared before is that myself and a few others, so the NRL outsider, Mike and Mary Kay, Ladies Who League, the three of us were approached about hosting an official World Cup podcast in the lead up to the event and covering the event day by day. And that sort of all fell apart because of everything that's going on. And that's fine. These things happen. But I had this argument with my wife because I'm like, no, you have to change the date because I could be working that week. Like, you know what I mean? And so we ended up changing the date and it doesn't matter now, potentially anyway. So, but you're right about, you know.
To give other people an example, we were honestly talking about selling a house a couple of months ago. And
yeah,
obviously that's a very big conversation. There were some, what we term lively discussions around that based on, you know, where we were going to be, what was happening with things. And we've now had probably extended deadlines, feels like 15, 20 times at the World Cup. So, thankfully, you know, we've decided we're not going to sell, but they're the extent that people are making decisions. You know, this is going to affect their lives. And I'm just one person out of thousands that are, you know, connected to this.
But just back to a thing you were saying before as well, Rob, and I know the answer to this question, but I want the listeners to know as well, with the Brazilian women's side going to the World Cup, how many of those players were from an Australian system?
Zero.
Exactly, right? And that's such an important answer because you guys can go no matter what. And for Brazil to be in a position to do that is quite incredible because there was no Brazilian women's rugby league side 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So, you know, hats off, you know, because you've realized very quickly you need to do it with people within and you can't rely on the others. And you probably learned that lesson from experience through Latin Heat and other things as well. I've had conversations with others from a few other nations and I won't name names yet, but, you know, there are other nations who've said, you know, look, if we can't get our NRL players, we've got players, you know, based in Europe or from domestically and whatever, and we'll be able to make up the numbers for a World Cup. Like, of course, people are going to want to play.
And I'm the Aussie face to that Brazil thing too. Like, the thing is, we got people like Hugo Froes and Gilberto Froes over in Brazil.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, if Gilberto put off his finishing his law degree, he worked for the government. Hugo had a similar job, and he's now taken up, like, a minor job basically cleaning a park so that they could devote their whole time to getting Brazil Rugby League into a position where it was, you know, entirely self-developed and they were building a strong base. And, you know, it's fine for me and you to sit here and chat about the difficulties that we're experiencing, but those guys, it's all consuming. This is going to totally change their lives. Same with many of the players. And that's, again, goes back to what hurts me when people are so dismissive about the overseas games. This really affects people on a personal level.
But not only, like, people don't realise as well, and within the NRL they don't realise that, and your average NRL fan wouldn't even realise, but by postponing or cancelling this World Cup, you're not just, you know, taking a chance for Jason Taumalolo to represent Tonga a few more times away or for Teddy to captain Australia away or whatever. Like, those guys that you've just mentioned, they might say, fuck it then. Like, we're not going to wait another 4 years for this and it might not even happen again. Like, fuck this. Why are we doing this?
Prime example, like, our players, we rock up and say, you know, we've got these coaching materials that we've been able to build from scratch, but then, you know, they might need to want to go on to a level two, and then we say, well, we don't have them available yet because we've got to translate and write and document everything into Portuguese. And then they'll be like, they look at you like, yeah, sure, you know, you haven't done that because you're lazy. Or, you know, we tell them the rules and then suddenly the NRL and the IRL change the rules mid-season and you go back and they're like, you told us the wrong rules. Yeah. And now we've made them give up, you know, their family, their holidays, their loved ones, so they could train for this World Cup. And then we're going to go back and say to them, oh, that World Cup's not happening.
Yeah.
They're going to think, what a joke of a sport and what a joke are these people that have been, you know, convincing me to do this for the last however many years.
Yeah. They can just go and play rugby sevens and be in the Olympics or at least try to, you know what I mean? They know that's going to happen every 4 years or every 5 years or 3 years, depending on situations with, you know.
And the other thing, some of them will be lost to sport altogether.
Yeah.
They'll go and not have as healthy lives.
Yeah.
As they do now.
How do we rely less on the NRL? What else can other people be doing?
Well, I think that's a million-dollar question, is it? But, I think it comes down to, again, building events and capability that doesn't rely on the NRL. And, you know, one of the bizarre things that, well, not bizarre, but ways I hadn't thought at all until the last couple of days was I've always supported the grandparent heritage system in rugby league. I thought it was a great system.
Yep.
But if we went back to parent, that would take so much power away from the NRL and its ability to stop events. You know, is that something that we look at? Do we need to look at changing the rules so that one or two countries cannot block international events from taking place?
Yep.
And I probably don't want to see that because I think it's important people have a connection to their grandparents. And I think the system's worked well when everyone's been cooperative in the past.
Yep.
But we've got to fight fire with fire sometimes.
It is hard. And, you know, if a decision was like that was made, then what does it mean for the future as well? Mm-hmm. You know, I know myself, I would qualify for Italy under the grandparent rule, but not under the parent rule. My parents were born here in Australia, and I would have been I was never good enough to play at that level, but I would have been so proud to represent Italy if I could in rugby league. And to know that I couldn't do that, it's a big deal. So the things we spoke about earlier on about the guys that could give back at the end of their careers, you know, we might lose some of those guys and girls as well. So, but it's a tricky one, and it's sort of the extent that we need to think. I do like the idea of, you know, creating events that don't rely on the Aussie dollars. And it's so tricky. Like, I mean, I look at a good example is some of these American teams, right? So Cleveland Rugby League, for example, like getting so much traction online, but a lot of that traction is from Australia and UK, and you know, Monty Gaddis put up a little what's it called? One of those what's it called? I'm losing my words. But you could vote on sort of on Twitter where you supported from, where you followed along from, and you know, high percentage was Australia, and then after that was UK, and then after that might have been New Zealand or something like that, and then finally, you know, towards the bottom of that list was the US, and we've got it the wrong way around. Like we need to figure out how do Americans support Cleveland? You know, how do more Brazilians get involved? Like, how do we get to a stage where, you know, an America's championship between US, Canada, Jamaica, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, becomes financially viable, and us regular NRL fans don't even know about it or know that it's on, or, you know, hear about it on the news after the fact?
I don't think it's pie in the sky stuff, though, because when we first started, like Latin Heat, I would say 75% of the people that supported our channels, you know, and then we're talking in the thousands, were from Australia mainly.
Yeah.
And now it's complete opposite. Like in Brazil, I know it's probably 10, 12% of the followers for Brazil Rugby League on social media are from Australia.
Yeah, wow.
So it takes that 5 years plus of continual work on the ground to you know, and development and marketing within your sphere, but it can happen. It's not something that we're just dreaming about.
And that goes back again to the time and effort, you know. You know, I sort of mentioned with the NRL, if they're not going to put a dollar in and take a dollar out at least that day, then they don't really want to do it. But maybe this is where International Rugby League can step in. And International Rugby League, you know, and you alluded to it as well, and I remember it being a basket case. You know, it really has, and it was a joke, and it still has that stigma with most fans. But, you know, once upon a time, there was probably one or two staff members at IRL, and now they're a bigger team, and now they have larger jurisdiction, and they're making a little bit, and they've got more nations playing than ever before, and they're signing up more members and all that sort of thing. So things are certainly changing, and really when you look at it, things have probably never been better on that level for International Rugby League. Like, there's just more nations and eyeballs and things like that, so, which is fantastic. But maybe it's up to the IRL now to sort of say, okay, let's look at what we've got without Australia and New Zealand, and let's look at what we can do. And whilst we can't give Brazil $100,000, like, how do we nurture this little group this little niche market that we're growing, and how do we make it bigger, and how do we let, you know, all the young boys and girls who probably don't have the build for soccer but might have the build for footy, how do we get them on board, and how do we get them watching, and how do we create a stronger domestic competition for them, and do that in a few nations. And it's hard for the IRL perspective because they've got, you know, they've got their 50 members or whatever it is now, and everyone's saying, what about me? What about me? I need help. Everyone's got their hand out, but it sort of can't work that way, which you've kind of alluded to as well.
Yeah, I think at this point, I'd like to give a shout out to like a real unsung hero of International Rugby League, and you probably come across him as well, Mike, and that's Steve Birchall.
Yeah.
So, like, for everyone out there, you know, the person on the street would never have heard of Steve Birchall, but what he's given to the sport,
yeah,
completely freely and behind the scenes and never with, you know, ego, is just immense. Like, he's built websites for most of the developing nations. He's run, you know, International Rugby League, as Asia-Pacific Rugby League websites. He's now, you know, he's brought it across now so that they're getting a, you know, a slow income from online advertising,
yeah,
and things like that weren't occurring before. And this, you know, again, he does this all in the background and out of the goodness of his heart. And these are the kind of people that we need to keep in the sport because they've got great ideas, they've got great know-how of doing things. But you can see people like Steve also get dismayed when what happens, as we've seen in the last week. So we don't want those valuable people walking away.
Steve is a great example, and he's one person that, again, you wouldn't, the regular rugby league fan wouldn't know who he is, right? And but he, like, and I've asked him on the show before, and he's like, no, I'm just happy to sort of be here in the background doing my own thing. And it's kind of like, but he'll always be there to help. Oh, do you need anything? His first question to me is always, can I help you with this? Or do you need something here? Or let me know if you need anything. He's one of those guys, and there's a lot of those. And look, you're one of them too. Guys, like, I feel like you're a bit of a, I remember growing up and reading the rugby league forums and going to the international section, and, you know, there was this guy, Tasbia Terry, and we've mentioned him already, and we've you know, spoken about him a little bit. But everyone in international rugby league circles or in the small niche international rugby league world knew who Taz was. But if you stepped outside of that circle, no one knew who he was. And I think you're the next one of those. Like, everyone in international rugby league knows Rob Bergen and the things he's done for Latin Heat and what's going on in Brazil. But if you go to the guy next door who supports the Bulldogs, you go, he goes, oh, Rob who? Like, you know what I mean? And it's just the selfless, like, work that you're putting in. And there's so many of those in our game, but you see them giving up. And I think that's one of the good things I've seen this week is that we've all been very angry. A lot of us have been anyway, but I've released a couple of pods recently talking about that and trying to get some things off my chest. And I think this episode will help as well. But there have been a lot of people reaching out to me in the last week in particular, and they're saying one of two things. They're either saying, A, please don't give up, or B, I was going to give up, but then I listened to you and we can't give up now. Like, we have to keep going. And it's really reassuring to hear that. Even though we're a small community, we're getting bigger, and I think we're getting better.
Yeah, and again, while we've been, you know, firing off at people that we're angry about, it probably goes to say that I've had my, you know, disagreements over the years with Danny Kazanjian at IRL and with Jeremy Edwards with Southern Pacific with Asia Pacific Rugby League.
Yeah,
but the relationship we have now is so open that I can go to those people and, you know, talk freely about the real concerns, and they know that I'm doing it from a good place. I honestly think what we have had in International Rugby League, that the system has improved a lot over the last 5 years. It can improve a hell of a lot more. But, you know, Jeremy will talk to all the emerging nations. We haven't always had that situation in the past with previous people. Like, he'll sit down and have a coffee with someone from El Salvador or from Chile, etc. You know, Danny and others have tried to promote having more power, more independent directors of the IRL, so that we have a say. I don't think it's been entirely successful yet, and we've seen the pushing through of the rules this year from the NRL.
Yeah,
and this probably is the one that, you know, I have to really, if we were to say something to Gus, is that why would you do that if you knew that the IRL couldn't effectively block that maneuver,
yeah,
and you you decrease the opportunity for 75% of nations playing a sport to be able to pick it up and to compete.
Yeah.
I think that was the hugest example of NRL selfishness. Them changing the rules, not only at their level, but then pushing it through at higher levels.
The fact that the NRL can change any rule without at least consulting the guys at the Super League and the RFL is a joke. Like, it's an absolute joke, and I've said it so many times, and I just can't fathom that that can even happen. In a, like, it's a different sport if you do that, and if everyone else doesn't follow along, then you've got two different sports, and it's just ridiculous. And there's probably, it's one of the things that stops us from growing as well. And you know, that there's not, you can't pick up the ball in Australia or the UK or in Brazil or in Spain or in the Philippines or in Lebanon or whatever, and it's exactly the same game. It's really sad. And it's, you know, the NRL just shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, they could, if they wouldn't need to do it with their own product, at the end of the day, it's their own product. But yeah, there should be consideration of what that, what the flow-on effect is for everyone else around the world. And really, was it that broken before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything, like, can everyone work together? Can the NRL have a seat at the table without wanting to sit at the head of the table, or can it be a round table with everyone there? Like, is that, am I, is this a utopia that I'm dreaming about that isn't possible?
I think it's always possible. I hate to shut myself off to the opportunity that everyone could cooperate, and sometimes it does take a bit of a leveler for everyone to sit back and say, well, you know, we're really all here to enjoy the same sport. We have so much potential if we pull in the same direction. But, you know, another thing that I wrote on Twitter was my wife waking up the other day to the news, and she genuinely turned and said to me, she's born in Brazil, had never heard of rugby league before she moved to Australia. And she just said, like, what is rugby league doing? Like, she played representative handball as a junior. And she said, you know, handball, volleyball, we're not even like huge sports. We're known around the world, and we still make sacrifices to grow. And she's like, I just really don't know what rugby league's trying to achieve. And she loves the sport.
Can I read it? Because I wrote this down, your tweet. I'm glad you mentioned it. But you said, my wife, in brackets, Brazilian born, just said these exact words to me. What is rugby league trying to achieve? It's not even that big of a sport. Handball, volleyball, people play it around the world, and still they make sacrifices to grow. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then another tweet I saw last night that I can't repeat verbatim was from someone, and they just said, you know, what's happening to other international nations? The NRL do not give an F. Like, and that is pretty accurate. Like, this, it's so self-consumed at the moment that we're just shutting everyone else out. And I don't think it needs to be like that. It's, yeah, prioritize your own competition, but everyone in the world should have some consideration for other people, whether that's in sport or in your everyday life.
Yeah.
I don't think it's asking for a lot to ask for empathy and cooperation.
Yeah, 100%, man. Mm. I think we've probably said our fair share. There's probably, if we brainstormed with enough people, we could probably figure out the answers, but the NRL will just tell us to fuck off anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But Rob, is there anything else you need to get off your chest before we call this episode, or we wrap this one up?
No, I want the people at the head of the table to all come together and put aside past regional differences, and for all of us to take a step back when we're just being self-obsessed and see what else. And I hope everyone gets to see a World Cup. That's probably the big thing.
100%, man. I hope we get to see it. I want to see the Brazilian girls out there. And I don't care if it's like a bunch of domestic Tongans there for Tonga rather than the Jason
Tomlinson. That's what the World Cup used to be.
Yeah,
so.
I kind of prefer that in a way. So let's see that. Let's do that. And Rob, mate, I couldn't have said it better myself. When I wanted to get some things off my chest and talk about this stuff, and I'm like, there's no one I'd rather do it with. So thank you for chasing kangaroos with me, mate.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that just sort of reminded me as you said that is if you go through the list of the people who reshared that post that I did about my experiences with international development in the NRL, whether that's on LinkedIn, you know, Twitter, Facebook, etc. So many of those people were involved in rugby league through to state of origin players, through to heads of nations and, like, you know, countries that have made the semifinals and quarterfinals at World Cups, probably dozens of emerging nations. So the sentiment is there is not to destroy rugby league, but obviously it's felt widely that we're at a point where things need to change.
100%, mate.
Mm.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, mate.
See you later.
Thanks, bud. See ya.
Chasing Kangaroos is brought to you by Matt Haynes Sport. We are mixed and produced by Paul Murchison. Our theme music was written and recorded by Ash Barco and Ricky Cancino. The podcast is hosted by me, Michael Carboni, and the Biggest Tiger. Views are our own.